Friends, as was announced today, we are taking up the subject Yoga of Detached Action. If you see our program, right from January's second week, we had Truth in All Faiths, then we had the subject Freedom of Mind and Soul, where we found the mind may be fitter, not the soul, the spiritual soul. And last week we had the Gujarati lecture, Who, Where, What is God? As a karmic coincidence, we are taking up today the Yoga of Detached Action, through which we can come to know who is God and whom we have merged ourselves. Now, see, we had the reading from the second chapter of the Gita. One may wonder how this is relevant to the subject today. Normally, when we talk about yoga, we normally take the third chapter and the sixth chapter and the 12th chapter. Now, in this chapter, you see, a contrast is given between a man who is fixed in devotion, contemplation, and confirmed spiritual knowledge, a Siddhaprajna, who is steady, who is calm, who is not affected by anything that may come to pass, pain or pleasure, or even adverse things in the whole life. Then every condition he receives is with equanimity, equal-minded, everything. And then he also points out, Mr. Judge, the hungry man loses sight of every other object but the gratifications of the appetite. Therefore, a hungry man immediately goes to take his food one. But even such a man, if he comes to know something about the Supreme, then he loses interest in all these things. Tries to strive to merge himself with the Supreme. Compared to this, it's contrasted with a person who is involved in his personal life. Look what is given here. He who attendeth to the inclination of his senses, in them hath a concern. See, look, one is concerned all the time about what happens to his senses and all that, has a concern. From this concern is created passion. This passion is rajas. About this we will come in detail, talk to you later. From this concern is created passion, anger. From anger is produced delusion. That means when you are in an angry mood, we are not clear-minded, we can't see clearly. We are under delusion. From delusion, a loss of memory. From loss of memory, loss of discrimination. When you have loss of memory itself, you don't behave properly. When you have lost discrimination, what happens? The entire viveka is gone. From the loss of discrimination, loss of all. But he who free from attachment is where it comes to see. Or repulsion for objects, that means equanimity. Equal-mindedness is called yoga. He who free from attachment or repulsion for objects, experience them through the senses and organs, with his heart obedient to his will. This is the most important key statement that comes. Obedient to his will attains the tranquility of thought. And this tranquil state attained therefrom fuel sun shall soon result in separation from all troubles. Then he points out, the man whose heart and mind are not at rest, if not always perturbed, is without wisdom or power of contemplation, who does not practice reflection, hath no calm. How can such a man without calm obtain happiness, etc.? Now, see, this whole point is in contrast is given here between the ideal person, Siddhaprajna, and an ordinary person like us. And then it is also given the modus operandi as to how we can detach ourselves from all these earthly moorings, reach the higher state of merging ourselves with the Supreme. Now, the whole point is, you see, look here, if you refer to the Gita itself, see, we have, what does Krishna say? Krishna points out in the Gita, the most important aspect is the importance of performing right action. performance of right action based on right perception of existing things, and a devotion to the welfare of humanity. Not this. Right performance of action, that is, performance of right action based on right perception of existing things, and the devotion to welfare of humanity. See, when you say right perception of existing things, then we must know what is real, what is not real, what is evanescent, ever-changing, which comes and goes, and what is the permanent, the everlasting, unmodifiable, the unconditioned. And then here, Krishna himself says in the second chapter itself, he says, see, on page 12, there is no existence for that which does not exist, nor is there any non-existence for what exists. That means there are two things here. There is something which exists and something which doesn't exist. Then what is that? Later on, proceeding on the same lines, he points out, yes, there is an immortal ego which is eternal, permanent, everlasting, which has no death, with no birth date, not death, but which is encased in a mortal body, which it informs and inhabits, which he uses all the time during the course of evolution. Once he finds no use for the physical body, the personality, then he discards it and takes some rest and comes back again with another body. It is just like you change your shirt when you come back from the tired office work due to sweat, etc. Likewise, you change your bodies also, in which, yes, we in here. Now, it is further explained. That means we have to understand the relationship of man, the mortal man, with his immortal aspect in him. That is, the permanent aspect versus the impermanent aspect of personality. This is further explained in the very first verse of the Gita. It's actually the keynote struck in this is the entire theme for the entire Bhagavad Gita. There are two things mentioned here. We are not worried about the battlefield, etc. He says, Kurukshetra, Dharmakshetra. Kurukshetra is the field of battle, where the battle was fought between Kauravas and Pandavas. But it also means, when you apply it to man, the Nara, the monad undergoing evolution, what happens when applied to man? It means a body obtained through karma. This body has been obtained through karma, please. Past karma, we have accumulated so much of good, bad, indifferent karma, out of which we take only such karma which can come to fruition in this particular life. Therefore, out of it, in other words, to put it differently, as some people say, to liquidate that kind of a karma which can come to fruition now. And then we come here, while having come here, we generate more karma. Good, bad, indifferent. Now this whole thing is, as Patanjali points out, these mental deposits include, which bring us back to a particular environment, that is, our parents, our the place of birth, that is the physical environment. But at other things, soul's environment, he says, that includes, yes, physical framework, our psychic nature, and moral, mental nature, all these we are based upon our past karma. It may be a mixture of good, bad, indifferent, so many things. We are not going to do that. The peace, yes, this body has been obtained through our karma itself. That is why good chetra obtained by karma. And a body obtained by karma, our own karma. Now, you see, this body is called where it has to be, we have to establish dharma. Or it's called the field of duty. What is dharma? What is duty? If we go to Kirti Theosophy, it should be explained, duty is that which is due to humanity at large. Yes, to humanity, the human race, family, kith and everybody. entire race, and those people who are weaker than ourselves. If we fail to discharge this duty, we will become moral bankrupts, spiritually insolvent. But Mr. Crosby uses something more of this, explains this. We'll read that, it's a bit longish, but it's worthwhile. Dharma is the word which in our language is translated as duty. But it has much wider range and meaning than which we accord to the word duty. There are many who think that duty is something that others think we should do. Others again consider duty to be irksome, and as actions to be performed under duress, therefore to be avoided. It is therefore necessary to grasp the meaning of the word duty as used in the Gita. Dharma means sacred law. The fulfillment of karmic destiny, please note this is very important. The fulfillment of karmic destiny through many incarnations, the working out and elimination of defects which have brought us into earth life under the conditions in which we find ourselves. Which conditions we should feel and know to be the very opportunities needed for our further progress. Why are we here? For repeated reincarnation, we have a purpose to fulfill our duty. This is why one of the great teachers wrote, duty is the royal talisman. Duty alone leads us to the goal. The same idea comes again in the third chapter of the Gita, where Sri Krishna says, we'll just take that. See here. Even by action, Janaka and others attain perfection. Even if the good of mankind only is considered by thee, the performance of duty will be plain. Here, Mr. Judge has translated it as good of mankind. But the original verse, the phrase used is locus angraha. That means world maintenance. We have come here to maintain the order in the world. It's a magnificent statement. Do we ever realize that? I mean, it is the same thing as duty, what Mr. Crosby has explained here. It is our responsibility. Only for that we take repeated births. That is the governance of the entire world. From that point of view, you see, what happens is the most important thing that we have to cultivate is, yes, how to do that. Then in the duty, what happens is, in the way, while we take birth, the moment we take birth, we identify ourselves as Nama Rupa. That is the whole problem. That particular aspect of identifying ourselves as Nama Rupa or the personality, see, yes, gives rise to various attachment. Attachment to what? Attachment to our family, kith, our friends, attachment to our foes also. Because the moment we say this fellow is an enemy, we are attaching ourselves with him. The attachment to, yes, to friends and foes and various things, such as religion. Supposing you are attached to religion, you feel your religion alone is supreme, superior to other religions. Then we can become a bigot or a fanatic and become intolerant of other people, pick up fights and all the conflicts. Or, you see, attachment to your personality. This is the problem, you see. When the moment you attach yourself to your personality, what happens? Your personality becomes the center of all your actions. Therefore, you become attached to your likes and dislikes. Your pet theories, which you can't give up, even if they are found to be wrong. Pet dogmas, pet ideas, and then doubt. See, despair, all these things come. You see, it's through the attachment arises grief. It is through attachment arises fear, says the enlightened one. But this attachment is everywhere. Because of thinking that we are separate from other beings. The moment we think that we are separate from others, and then all our actions are going to be based on this focal point or center, then what happens? Our desire becomes foremost. Our karma. The karma, because of desire, we want this, we want that, we want this. We want to become rich. Because we think riches will give us happiness. We want to become famous. Or we run after fame, name, power, positions, status. See, different, these things are the result of our attachment to our personality. And then how do you control this? And therefore, in the third Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna points out, dedicate every action unto me. Look at the verse, I think it's here. Do thou perform the right actions? Actions is superior to inaction. Because many people think detached action. Or, what is today's? Detached action means selfless or renouncing the action. Renouncing the action does not mean you renounce totally, you remain absolutely inactive. No. Even Krishna says, you see, if I were not indefatigable in action, the whole system of worlds will collapse. Therefore he says, look here, perform actions, action is superior in action. The journey of the mortal frame cannot be accomplished by inaction. All action performed other than a sacrifice unto God make the actor bound by action. That means sacrifice unto God means we should dedicate everything to Ishvara Vachana. Abandon then, O Sanat Bhakti, all selfish motives and in action perform the duty for him alone. That means you renounce the fruits of action in the action itself. Here you substitute instead of Ishvara, the law. That means you do everything according to your duty in whatever manner you may and leave the results to the law. Then this is called Hindu philosophy, Ishvarapana. That means you offer everything to Ishvara, the law. It means even after doing that, you see, if the results don't turn out, or till the results turn out, in whatever way, you are anxious to find it. You may have done very well in your studies, but till the results come, you are worried, what's going to be? Or when the results come, then you feel, oh, I have studied so much, and I have not got the high percentage. All kinds of things come. Because of your worry, because of your involvement, attachment to the results, wrapped up in your own emotion. Therefore, the moment you rely on the law, that there is an immutable eternal law which works righteously, which is no respecter of persons, which moves always righteously, which ultimately brings out, yes, what you have not only deserved, but desired. This is what comes in the 9th chapter of the Gita, where he says, Anusuyeve, that is, unto thee findeth no fault. What fault? Finding fault with what? With the things that you have received? With the karma which you are facing? All the difficulties you are facing? See, you should not be not only a carping critic, but you must understand, there is a law which is inherent in you. Atma is the highest agent of that law. It's working through you. So from that point of view, everything happens according to what you have done, what you have desired. This is the most important point. And this is a fundamental thing before further knowledge can be given. 9th chapter says, unto thee he findeth no fault, I will declare the most sacred, secret, eternal law, kingly mystery. Kingly knowledge. Having known that, there is nothing else to be known. Easy to perform. I mean, this is all beautiful words, but we find it so difficult. Even to detach ourselves from so many things. See, the whole point that's being reached here is, look, the whole thing, the moment we base our whole thinking to personality, we are finished. Because the moment we think that we are separate, then we are not doing anything for the world. We have lost sight of the very purpose. And it's in fact, in one place, the Buddha says, I think it's here, living this world, they attain bliss of nirvana, whose appetites have been conquered, whose minds are well grounded in the elements of enlightenment. There's a footnote there. I'm not going into that. And who cling to nothing but enjoy the freedom of detachment. Now, on this, the commentator says, Buddha, while he was trying to find out what's the cause of sorrow and all that, he used to have pity, sorrow, sometimes cry, because the way the people suffered and all that. The moment he attained enlightenment, that he didn't cry. He found out the cause of sorrow. The sorrow is cause of sorrow and the cure of sorrow. When he started teaching them how to get rid of the sorrow and suffering. Therefore, see, look here. See, therefore, in that sense, one of the commentators says, even to say, to live to benefit mankind in the first step, it can be misunderstood. That is, you're attaching yourself to humanity. The moment you attach yourself to humanity, you lose sight. Therefore, from that point, what you say? It is, yes, you should try to understand humanity is your welfare, it's a duty to look after. It's not simply that we are living only for that. No, it's the whole thing is, yes, the very purpose of life, we have come here, incarnation of incarnation, only to look after the locus of God. See, this is important for us to understand. Attachment could be anything. Then, you see, once you try to detach yourself from these things, worldly things, then what happens? What stands in the way? You see, there is a, in the sixth chapter of the Gita, Sri Krishna, now Arjuna asks, see, I am trying to control my mind. It's turbulent. See, it's restless. I can't control it. And I think it's also here. Wait. Yeah. Later a minute. I think it's not here. Okay. I'll see. We will just see. Right. See, Arjuna asks, O slayer of Madhu, on account of the restlessness of mind, I do not perceive any possibility of steady continuance in this yoga of equanimity, which thou hast declared. For indeed, O Krishna, the mind is full of agitation because of our attachment. Turbulent, strong and obstinate, I believe the restraint of it is to be as difficult as that of the wind. And Krishna says, don't worry and all, it's not there. No, he says, without doubt, O thou mighty arms, the mind is restless. He agrees with Arjuna, all of us, and hard to restrain. But it may be restrained, O son of Kunti, by practice and absence of desire. Practice and absence of desire. Yet, in my opinion, this divine discipline called yoga is very difficult for one who hath not his soul in his own control. Because he moves here and there, wanders like a monkey. Yet may be acquired through proper means by one who is assiduous and controlleth his heart. But this is the means. That means still, this is one of the parameters, the fourth parameter. Indifference to pain, viraga. Indifference to pain and pleasure. Illusion conquered. Truth alone perceived. Again, we go back to the first statement we made. See, Gita places emphasis on the importance of the right performance of acts. Based on right perception of existing things. And with the devotion to the welfare of humanity. Therefore, right perception of existing things. Therefore, what we see is not real, unfortunately. And what we feel as real is unreal. And what we do, we think asat or not existence is actually real. See, appearance is not real. This is the problem, is we don't understand. Therefore, asat is nothing but ignorance of the nature, real nature of things. Ignorance is nothing but the ignorance of the real nature of human being. There is that physical aspect which you think is permanent. You say permanent. It's transitory, evanescent, illusionary. The real thing is the Supreme, the Krishna within the chariot here. Who alone can be real, immortal, eternal? This kind of, that's why it's the illusion. Unless the illusion is removed, you cannot perceive truth. The same thing comes in the 18th chapter, we'll come to that little later. Now, therefore, the problem is, what is the cause of all this problem? Before we go to that, to understand what is the cause, let's try to understand what action is. Then, perhaps, we can to understand what is the difficulty. Our actions are based on what? There is action and reaction. There is cause and effect. No effect can be there without cause. But unfortunately, we don't see the link between the two because of the time lag. But every action has some basis for reaction. That is, our thought becomes the basis of our action. But behind thought, what is that? We say that motive power that impels us to action, what is that? Will. The divine will acting through man, yes, forces us to act, impels us to act. But behind will stands desire. This is a problem, you know. Therefore, the divine will, when it comes to working through personality, is much. We have umpteen desires, personal desires. Therefore, the energy, supreme energy, the force of spirit in action, gets completely dissipated when it comes to us. Therefore, it's purely the desire that forms the basis of our action. Behind our thought, ultimately, it's a desire. Therefore, the desire, that is the basis wherein our karma inheres. What happens when we meet that, then we are building a wall around us. And when we throw a ball at the wall, it rebounds. Therefore, all the karmic effects rebounds on us. And this is normally we use an analogy. You throw a stone in the pond. Sorry. From the point of disturbance, concentric ripples go up to the shore and come back to the place of center of disturbance till equilibrium is restored. And then you see, it doesn't go beyond the banks of the pond. Because that's a different plane entirely. So we have done the same thing by having desire as our base in which our karmic effects are in here. Then what happens? Then we are all the time erecting a wall through our own ignorance. The moment we remove that base, that means we think all the time universally, noble ideas, noble things, and all the time without any selfishness, self-interest, work for humanity, doing our work, what happens? We are not attaching anything to our mind. Mr. Judge says, the moment you attach ourselves to something, then your mind attaches something to itself, then it becomes involved. Therefore, we should not attach our mind to anything. That means detach our mind slowly and steadily from all worldly things. I mean, we'll come later, I don't know, the time will permit. Ashtavakra's teachings is there, beautiful. Then you say, what happens? But now, having said this, finally desire is the basis. Why this desire? What happens? Why? What is the cause of all this? It's desire. Ultimately, mind, because mind gets caught in the desire principle, karma. Now, see, in the third chapter of the Gita, Krishna asks, what, O Keshava, what descendant of Rishni, is man by what is he propelled to commit ahimsa? Seemingly against his will. Against his will. And if as if constrained by some secret force. It is lust which instigates you. It is passion sprung from the quality of rajas. insatiable and full of sin. Know this to be the enemy of man and earth. As the flame is surrounded by smoke, and a mirror by rust, and as the womb envelops the fetus, so is the universe surrounded by passion. We can't do anything. But can we? By this, the constant enemy of wise man, formed from desire, which rages like fire, and is never to be appeased, is discriminating knowledge surrounded. Finished. Our Viveka itself is caught in this. Its empire is over the senses and organs, the thinking principle, yes, manas, and the discriminating faculty. Also, by means of these, it clouded the discrimination and deluded the Lord in the body. We are all deluded. Because of the rajasic principle, because of the passion, which creates anger, we lose our mind. We lose our senses, we say. I am not in my senses. Because we are given way, we attach to our passions and laziness and lust. Therefore, O vessel, the descendants of Bharata, at the very south, restraining the senses, thou should conquer this sin, which is destroyer of knowledge and of spiritual discernment. And the method is given. The senses and organs are esteemed great, but the thinking principle is greater than they. See, manas is far superior. The senses and organs, the discriminating principle is higher than even thinking principle. And above that is the Supreme Spirit. Therefore, try to control by the higher the lower. And the voice also points out the divine should control the desire principle also. Then having seen this, then, you see, there is a beautiful verse that occurs. Appetite grows in what it feeds. Then here, Manu Dharma Shastra. Desire is never satisfied by the enjoyments of objects of desire. It grows more and more as does the fire to which fuel is added. It goes. Appetite grows in what it feeds. Then Spinoza, it's a beautiful thing. Talks of the general tendency of human being due to attachment. And when you know there is something greater, then the joy is greater. He points out, for the things which men, to judge by their actions, deem the highest good are riches, fame, and sensual pleasure. Of these, the last, that is sensual pleasure, is followed by satiety, and repentance. We fall a victim to so many diseases and finally we repent also. The other two are never satiated. Look at this. The more we have regarding riches, the more we have, the more we want. Why? The love of fame compels us to order our lives by the opinion of others. Because somebody will say, if you do this, you will get more fame. You try to order our life according to that. But if a thing is not loved, no quarrels will arise. No sadness will be felt if it will arise. No sadness will be felt if it perishes. No envy if another has it. In short, no disturbance of mind. All these spring from the love of that which passes away. Evanescent. All our attachments are evanescent. To changing things. Conditioned things. See, that which passes away. All these spring from the love of that which passes away. But the love of a thing eternal and infinite fills the mind wholly with joy and unmingled with sadness. Therefore, it's greatly to be desired and to be sought with our strength. Once you know, yes, there is a supreme being in you and in which we have to take refuge, then that thing is. That's why I said, even the hungry man, you see, when he knows the nature of supreme, then he will forget his hunger and strive to unite himself with it through proper detached action. right performance of action without any selfish interest, leaving all your selfish interest in the action itself. Now, there are certain things, the time is going to be out, but there are certain things from the quotation we have to read. See, there is always this question comes up. When you talk about desire and conquering, practicing viraga, the illusion comes, or delusion comes. Whoever in acting dedicates the actions to the Supreme Spirit and puts aside all selfish interest in the result is an untouched person. This is from the 5th chapter. Even as the leaf of the lotus is unaffected by the waters, Padma Patra Iva Ambasa, that's like water, a lotus leaf is completely bereft of water. The truly devoted for the purification heart perform actions with their bodies, their minds, their understanding, and their senses, putting away all self-interest. The man who is devoted and not attached to the fruit of action obtains tranquility, while he, though through desire, is attached to the fruit of action, is bound down thereby. Then, another place, that has, we'll skip something. And then you see, true resignation has to be adopted. Mr. Jarge, in his notes in the Bhagavad Gita, points out, he gives a translation, correct translation, the first verse of the Isavasya Upanishad. He says, all this, whatsoever moves on earth, is to be surrendered to the Lord, the Self. When thou hast surrendered all this, then thou mayest enjoy. What is there? Nothing is yours. Everything has to be surrendered to the Lord. We won't this body. We have got it from Mother Earth, and one day it's going to be consigned to Mother Earth. We don't own anything, in fact. Everything borrowed. The only reality is that one which animates the body, which inhabits the body, which informs the body. Then see, there are a couple of things. Then Viveka Chudamani, masterpiece of Shankaracharya, the quest to develop wisdom. A couple of verses come, which is quite interesting. Therefore, mind is the cause of bondage. That's where the option starts. And mind, you see, under the clutches of karma. See here, there are two things here. Mind is also the cause of bondage. It's also the cause of freedom, or detachment. Therefore, mind is the cause of bondage, and in turn is liberation. You'll see how it is. When darkened by the powers of passion, it is the cause of bondage. Again, passion comes. The last, the rajas principle, our attachment to personality. When darkened by the powers of passion, it is the cause of bondage. When pure of passion and darkness, it is the cause of liberation. Therefore, the crux of the problem is we have to control the mind. To free ourselves from, at least temporarily, from karma, the lower karma. There is also another aspect of karma, higher aspect. When discernment and dispassion are dominant, gaining purity, the mind makes for liberation. And therefore, if the wise man who seeks liberation strengthens these two in himself as the first step. Therefore, what is the problem? Why can't we free ourselves from the karma? Yes, it's possible. We have to take enormous effort. See, we have to be, we restrain ourselves in everything that we do during life for the worldly things. Every second we have to be very careful not to attach ourselves with anything of the worldly things. Restrain in everything. Therefore, the one are the fundamental principles or the fundamental truth or virtue, important virtues that we have to cultivate is viraga. Indifference to pain and pleasure, illusion conquered, truth alone pursued. See, we are all the time under delusion, you see, all the time thinking that this is real. And therefore, it says, the moment we are able to free our lower mind, incarnated mind, from karma, that moment, we can allow or activate our free will in us, which can guide us to our highest mental faculties. And then we can in fact activate that free will in man. Unfortunately, the free will is dormant now. We can't allow it to activate here because our lower mind is enmeshed in karma. Then only she can. See, when we free our mind, it becomes a focal point where the fifth and sixth principle can reflect itself. As, or the other words, put it differently, the manas looks to its devil parent for refuge. When there is even a temporary conjunction between buddhi and manas, yes, you can be, yes, have that wonderful enlightenment or intuition wakened up. Now, I said there are certain things which we have to give here. See here. Ashtavakra, well, we don't go into how he was born and all that, but because time is short. Ashtavakra was one of the greatest saints who became a teacher to Janaka. And Janaka was his pupil. Then she says, as we have seen already, he who gains knowledge of the true nature of pure consciousness. There's a Mahavakya in Upanishad. Prajnanam Brahman. That means consciousness is Brahman. See, it reflects in us as an unconditioned consciousness. But the unconditioned consciousness is just one consciousness. That is Brahman. He who gains knowledge by true nature of pure consciousness, by complete indifference to the world, by equanimity. Equal-mindedness is called yoga. Skill in performance of action is called yoga. By reasoning and saves himself from the round of birth and rebirth, is he not really the spiritual guide? Then there's something wonderful comes, which is shocking to many of us. Yeah. See, there are four stages in Hindu ashramas. There is dharma, artha, kama, moksha. So, the Ashtavakra says you have to be indifferent to all this. Because, he says, cultivate indifference to everything having given up kama, desire. Because of desire, you are tend to, yes, lust. Tend to, yes, involve yourself in the lower kama. And then which is the enemy? Artha. That means artha means worldly property. Gaining. Once you have property, then what happens? Why is it? Why we have to avoid? Then we will have to be worried how to protect this property. How to proceed from income tax. It is not happening to me. See, therefore he says, and dharma. It's performance of good works. See, if you do good works, you get good punya. Punya. That is, you merit, you accumulate merit for future births. Therefore, Ashtavakra says, you have to, yes, become indifferent to all these things. He says, yes, that's why he says, dharma, artha, kama are the three aims of ordinary man's existence. But in order to attain moksha, liberation, which is samambhavanam of life, one has to renounce these three things also. The absolute can never be reached as long as there is the least speck of desire or attachment to anything. And without desire, all these three aims are meaningless. Hence the necessity of renouncing them. Then, he says, of course this also comes in the Bhagavad Gita, bondage consists only in desire. Okay, once we free our mind from desire, then we can activate our buddhi. Now, another thing which comes in the Gita, 13th Gita. Kingdoms, sons, wives, bodies and pleasures have been lost to you birth after birth, even though you were attached to them. It means, the commentator says, look here, we have been attached to our children, wife and husband. And because of our attachment, life after life, what happens when something happens to them? It gives us grief, suffering. when they pass away, when loved one passes away, what happens to us? Therefore, we have to become indifferent, even to that kind of attachment. We have to have detached perception of these. Then, wonderful thing comes, you see. Yeah. This comes, then this is a culmination. Actually, this is what takes place in the 18th chapter of the Gita. Yajnavalkya, the great sage, then Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. His disciples are Janaka, Maitreya and Gargi. Maitreya and Gargi were his wives. Therefore, he took them also as his chelas, and then taught them how to gain immortality. And once it so happened that Maitreya asked him a question. Then he says, I'm talking about the previous verse. You take a lump of salt, put it in a jug of water, let it dissolve completely. The top portion you taste is salt. The center portion is also salty. The bottom portion is also salt. Like that, the one self, or the Sarvavyapi, is everywhere. The one universal self. Like this, the self in us, if it is dissolved like this, that is merged in that one reality, nothing remains except in that one. And Maitreya says, "You are confusing me. My mind is clouded." Then he says, Maitreya said, here you have bewildered me, sir, by saying that when he is gone, there is no more consciousness. That means individual consciousness is not there. Then he said, Yajnavalkya replied, surely I am not saying anything bewildering. It is wisdom in us, my dear. And there is duality, as it were, one smells another. One sees another. One hears another, one speaks to another, one thinks of another, one understands another. But when everything has become the self, this is what happens in the 18th chapter. Arjuna realizes that Krishna was not different from him. See, look here, but when everything has become the self, then by what and whom should one smell? By what and whom should one sense? By what and whom should one hear? By what and to whom should one speak? By what and of whom should one think? And by what of whom and should one understand? What should one know that by which all this is known?